Finding and keeping affordable housing can turn into an ongoing battle for many Hoosiers. If income is spent disproportionately on housing, that means less money spent on food, education, and medical expenses. The Federal Housing Choice Voucher Program provides a way for individuals and families on the margins to afford rent and avoid an eviction or even homelessness. In the first of a three-part series, WBAA's Emily Seiberg reports on how families find themselves on the waiting list to receive those vouchers.
Subsidized housing is often referred to by the term Section 8. That refers to an amendment to the Housing Act of 1937 that authorizes housing assistance to low-income households. Those awarded housing choice vouchers pay 30% of their gross income towards housing costs, and the voucher covers the rest.
For many low-wage workers, their wages are just too low to afford the rental housing that's in the market. Without some type of assistance.
That's Andrew Arand, Vice President of Research at the National Low-Income Housing Coalition. His group estimates the housing wage required to pay rent and utilities in Indiana is $15.17 per hour, working 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year. That's based on the average fair market rent for a two-bedroom apartment, $789. The minimum wage in Indiana, less than half that figure, $7.25 an hour. Housing vouchers can be used at any property a landlord agrees may participate in the program. Housing authorities ultimately assess a household's specific voucher needs based on household size and income. They can also apply what's called a preference, a way to filter and assess the waitlist in a more targeted way based on the area in which the housing authority is stationed. There are preferences for veterans, for those with disabilities, and for victims of domestic abuse. All groups whose earning options can be more limited. Greater Lafayette YWCA Domestic Violence Program Director Becky Wellner says the people with whom she works often lack the safety net of friends and family other households might have.
So many of our clients have not just one child, but lots of kiddos. And if they're not in school, then you're not only working a minimum wage job that is never going to be enough for you to pay your rent on your own, but then you also have to pay for childcare.
A 2016 study by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities found that 8% of Hoosiers utilizing vouchers were elderly, 22% had disabilities, and 3/4 were families with children. While some voucher households might be experiencing a moment of crisis that throws off their financial equilibrium and eventually subsides, like a divorce or a death in the family, some live in a chronic state of poverty that doesn't allow them to save money or make a plan. The National Low-Income Housing Coalition's Andrew Arand says even a small change can upset a delicate financial balance.
And so what happens, of course, you know, is they're spending more than half of their income on rent. And then if there's an unexpected emergency, like say, you know, they need to get a car repair or they have an unexpected medical bill, it's very easy to fall behind on rent.
The Lafayette Housing Authority specifies income limits for applicants who fall into two categories, very low income and extremely low income. A one-person household in Tippecanoe County earning $13,150 annually is considered extremely low income. But according to data from the Lafayette Housing Authority, the average gross income of a household on the housing voucher waitlist is just $6,600.
Some of the public perception that people kind of engineer their lives so that they can qualify for rent assistance is incredibly uninformed.
Adam Murphy is the homeless outreach coordinator for the city of Lafayette.
If you were to organize your life so that you could receive rent assistance, you're saying no to so many good things on purpose, and that just doesn't add up.
Murphy manages housing assistance for people who are chronically homeless in conjunction with a mental health or substance abuse issue, or HIV and AIDS. On the spectrum of people battling housing insecurity, Murphy works with those whose barriers to stability mean they require help through every step of the housing process. But getting a voucher is also dependent on the system and can take time, in some cases, a long time. First, a city has to keep its wait list open. Gary and Indianapolis have closed theirs due to high demand. Lafayette's is open, but families wait, on average, almost a year to receive their voucher. And that doesn't take into account the time spent waiting to apply for the voucher. The Lafayette Housing Authority accepts applications for just 2 hours per month, on the first Wednesday of every month, between 8 a.m. and 10 a.m. And getting on the list also requires bringing in documents like Social Security cards and birth certificates, for every household member before the application is processed. The LHA's wait list is currently 777 households long. For WBAA News, I'm Emily Seiberg.
Every housing voucher recipient finds themselves fighting to stay housed for a different reason. For one Lafayette resident, serious ongoing health issues have taken away her ability to work for an income and to make long-term plans for herself and her children. In the second of a three-part series, WBAA's Emily Seiberg has a profile of one single mom for whom even a small crisis can have a major impact.
Just some of them. It's not all of them.
Okay.
This is furmesteride. This like an iron pill.
And what does that do?
Help me build up blood, red blood cell count. Because I don't make a lot of blood. I'm anemic.
In a two-bedroom apartment in Lafayette's Romney Meadows housing complex, sunlight fills a small kitchen. There are neatly stacked dishes drying next to the sink, two little boys eating bowls of cereal and blowing bubbles in their milk, and bottles of medication lined up in a row on the kitchen table.
My name is Shatamara McNally, and I'm 25 years old, and I currently receive Section 8 voucher program.
McNally has two sons, aged 7 and 2, and says she experienced hypertension during both of her pregnancies. But her health took a significant turn for the worse after the birth of her youngest son, leaving her unable to work.
I'm waiting on a heart transplant. It's enlarged. Like, I have a heart of a 92-year-old right now. They just said chronic congestive heart failure.
McNally is from Chicago and moved to Lafayette at the end of 2014. When she moved into her apartment at Romney Meadows, which provides low-income housing, she wasn't living there with a housing voucher yet. Her apartment itself was subsidized. Since moving to Lafayette, McNally has worked on and off at McDonald's and at Alorica, a telecommunications business, but she says her medical issues have largely kept her at home. After a heart episode landed her in the emergency room in June 2016, a crisis she says she's lucky to have survived, she applied for disability.
726. I'm forced to live with 726 a month.
A month?
Yes.
For everything?
Yes.
McNally budgets carefully. She has to on $8,700 a year. Her disability payments have to cover rent, utilities, a car payment, a phone bill. She has the co-pays on her prescription medications and biweekly doctor's visits. She receives benefits from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, commonly known as food stamps, and receives health care coverage under the Healthy Indiana Plan, Indiana's version of Medicaid. If all else fails, she can make up the difference with financial assistance from her son's father's. But because of her heart, she's in a holding pattern.
I barely eat and sleep. I hardly know what a normal life is. I don't have the average life of a 25-year-old.
When McNally applied for housing assistance, her disability helped her move up the wait list quickly, and she received her voucher in a matter of months. McNally says Romney Meadows, which the city's mayor has singled out as a hub of crime, isn't as bad as people make it seem. She has weighed moving back to Chicago to receive medical care from her previous doctors, but she likes Lafayette. The cost of living is cheaper than in Chicago, and McNally, who's had two family members killed there, feels she and her kids are safer in Lafayette.
The violence in Chicago was just getting worse and worse.
She's used to being a go-to person, she says, and putting money in the bank. McNally imagines going back to school, working again, and buying a house she can leave for her sons in case something happens to her. And McNally says even her situation might not be as bad as some, so she doesn't want to keep using her voucher forever.
I feel like it should be a time limit on stuff like this. At least I'm giving myself a time limit, because there's probably somebody out there who really need it more than me, who don't have no type of income and nothing coming in.
For now, her life is staying at home and raising her kids, because that's what her circumstances will allow.
I'm almost potty trained. I'm not even all the way to yet. I'm learning my colors. I know my body parts. I can count to four.
For WBAA News, I'm Emily Seiberg.
The factors that lead to a housing crisis can be as simple as an unpaid bill, or reflect deeper issues that don't allow people to break the cycle of poverty and create a stable living environment. Creating opportunities for people to build their capacity to stay housed and employed is one way to ensure that the cycle ends. In a final story of her three-part series on low-income housing, WBAA's Emily Seiberg examines how tackling a housing crisis should be a holistic process.
During the second week of January, Indiana energy company Vectren announced that their customers would see, on average, a 30% increase to their bills from the same time period the previous winter. Bitterly cold temperatures caused a spike in gas deliveries. Vectren encouraged customers who might have difficulty paying to contact the company to arrange budget payment plans. But when a family lives paycheck to paycheck, their choices are already limited.
They're always having to make decisions in a crisis situation.
Pam Biggs Reed is the executive director of Bauer Family Resources in Lafayette, which works with families who are struggling to stay functional.
It's what's the least bad choice, not what's the best good choice.
Bauer provides options like therapeutic services that help clients work through past and current traumas. But it also has funding that allows the organization to spend money on more concrete issues their clients face, like a high energy bill.
Sometimes paying an electric bill so a family stays housed is all the help they need.
But often the bill is just the surface problem. A closer look can reveal why the electric bill isn't getting paid to begin with, and that can range from poor budgeting skills to a more serious level of dysfunction.
So somebody comes in and says, I can't pay my electric bill. And they're going to shut off the electric, so we get the electric bill paid, and we keep meeting with them, and we find out, well, they can't get the electric bill paid because their abusive partner took the money that was for the electric bill and bought drugs with it. That's a different issue to deal with than just turning on the electric.
For people managing a precarious housing situation, then, a holistic approach, which addresses more than just immediate physical needs, could help identify the underlying issues and work through more than one problem at a time. Stable housing first, but then what happens next? Lafayette's Food Finders Food Bank distributes food to 16 counties, but it also has an on-site grocery store where clients can come and shop for their meals. President Katie Bunder says they assess their clients for their level of food insecurity, but their needs might extend beyond that.
When they come in, we do an intake process the first time they come. And in that process, we will ask them a lot of questions about their family size, their income, their housing, their health care. We're trying to assess what services we might be able to help them get if they don't have them.
Food Finders also offers classes to its clients geared towards food and nutrition, the importance of exercise and healthy living, dealing with diabetes and blood pressure, meal planning and budgeting, even gardening. But she says education must also extend to the community so residents understand what's at stake for their neighbors who live in subsidized housing.
I also think that it's comfortable for people who've always been here to say that we don't have homegrown poverty. That's poverty from other places invading our town.
But Pam Biggs Reed says some of the families with whom she works feel isolated and embarrassed by the awareness of their circumstances, and that while donations can help, so can a kind word to a mother in a grocery store trying to piece together the meals for the week.
If we truly believe that people's intent is to do the best they can, and we believe that human beings are flawed and can't always do the best they can because of things that happen in their lives, then how do we help them walk alongside them to help them do better, to take the responsibility that and provide the resources and support they need to overcome and do differently when they want to?
Lafayette residents in need of low-income housing grapple with a range of issues, from local governmental opposition to building more units, to misconceptions held by fellow citizens, to circumstances beyond their control, to their own sometimes problematic choices. Experts say the system isn't perfect, but learning how to work within its limitations is key. Everything depends on housing. Without that, any structure amounts to little more than a house of cards. For WBAA News, I'm Emily Seiberg.